Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. Today marks the 50th anniversary of Earth Day. The Safer at Home order has prevented any large gatherings to celebrate, so many are finding ways to mark the occasion virtually. Gaylord Nelson, who served as Wisconsin's governor and a U.S. senator, is the founder of Earth Day. Nelson's daughter, Tia Nelson, is carrying on her father's legacy. She helped coordinate a short film to highlight Earth Day's half-century milestone. Nelson spoke with WUWM's environmental reporter Susan Bentz about the film and the history of Earth Day.
It's an important part of the Earth Day story. My father's trip to Santa Barbara to personally look at the devastation of what was then the largest oil spill in American history. And he got on a plane after that visit and picked up a Ramparts magazine in which the cover story was about how anti-war teach-ins on campus were changing the national discourse on the Vietnam War, and that was his aha moment. The actual journey to that moment was much longer and circuitous and involved many setbacks and disappointments in my father's earlier career. Keep in mind that he'd served as two terms as governor and had earned the moniker the conservation governor for promoting a penny a pack tax on cigarettes to fund the acquisition of public recreation land in Wisconsin. He was elected to the Senate, went off to Washington. He took with him a scrapbook of all the good press he'd gotten for his conservation initiatives as governor, and tried to convince fellow members of Congress that it was a winning issue and that fell on deaf ears. He persuaded President Kennedy to go on a conservation tour, and the president agreed. This was in 1963, a few months before the president was assassinated. And they went on that tour. I have some correspondence between Arthur Schlesinger, who was chief of staff to the president at the time, asking my father for ideas for the president to speak to. But the tour was a failure and a great disappointment to my father. And it was cut short, canceled early on, as I recall. And so my father's journey to this idea of an environmental teach-in, which got renamed wisely, renamed Earth Day, that journey was much longer, but it was an aha moment for him when he was thinking about how youth were changing the national discourse on a critical and divisive issue in America at the time, namely the Vietnam War.
So this was an extremely tumultuous period of U.S. history, and your dad was trying to push this policy to protect the environment.
Well, yes, and it's interesting to reflect just how tumultuous that decade leading up to the first Earth Day was. The civil rights battles, the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy in 1968, and of Martin Luther King, and the divisiveness of the war itself. And so we were living in quite tumultuous times and as a very politically divided country. And for me, that's an interesting thing to reflect on now as we experience hyperpartisan and divisive, politically divisive time today. Earth Day managed to inspire a sense of unity around critical environmental issues at the time in a way that was successful beyond my father's wildest dreams.
So 20 million people participated in the first Earth Day.
Yes, that is the estimated number of people involved, and that would have made it the largest secular event in history.
I've heard the University of Michigan had a lot to do with Earth Day's momentum.
Yes, in the prologue to Adam Rome's book, The Genius of Earth Day, How a 1970 Teach-In Unexpectedly Made the First Green Generation, a fabulous book and resource. In the prologue, the first event that Adam speaks about was the one that occurred in Ann Arbor, Michigan on March 11th, 1970, and there were 14,000 people gathered at the university's basketball arena for the kickoff of their teach-in. And they began with the cast of the musical Hair singing Let the Sunshine In. The governor spoke. Barry Commoner gave the keynote address. And it was certainly a significant harbinger of things to come.
So one of the ways you hope to bring attention to Earth Day's 50th anniversary is through a short film. How did you settle on that idea?
When I was reflecting on the 50th anniversary, I wanted to do more. Of course, I felt a great sense of duty to tell my father's story and inspire youth of today to see the power of individual action that was so well demonstrated that first Earth Day. But I didn't want to just reflect on the past. I wanted to tell a story that was relevant to contemporary times and to inspire people to think about what we want Earth Day to look on the, like on the 100th anniversary. And there were several critical elements of in the first Earth Day. It was multi-generational. Though driven by youth energy, it was multi-generational, it was bipartisan, and my father gave a striking call to social and environmental justice in his speech on that first Earth Day, which he gave at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee campus. And we use a clip from that speech to tell the story, and I certainly hope inspire the youth of today. And so I reflected on how to best do that, and I had been come a great admirer of the work of Varshini Prakash, co-founder of the Sunrise Movement, one of the most powerful youth activist groups in the country, and had come to see the work of a former Republican congressman and evangelical Christian, Bob Inglis, who had been a climate change skeptic and has now dedicated his life to addressing the climate change crisis. And he founded a group called Republic EN. And I thought that Varshini's voice and Bob's voice would be perfect bookends to this story in that they demonstrated the multi-generational and bipartisan elements that were so critical to the success of the first Earth Day.
Unfortunately, despite multiple attempts, I wasn't able to reach Varshini Prakash, co-founder of the Sunrise Movement. I'll hope to talk with her another day. But Bob Inglis and I did chat. He shared a bit of his story, how he shifted from climate change denier to believer. It happened when he served in the U.S. Congress.
Well, for my first 6 years in Congress, I said that climate change was nonsense. I didn't know anything about it except that Al Gore was for it. And inasmuch as I represented an extremely conservative district in South Carolina, that was the end of the inquiry. I admit that's pretty ignorant, but that's the way it was for 6 years. I was out of Congress for 6 years doing commercial real estate law. Had the opportunity to run again in 04 for the very same seat. And my son, the eldest of our five kids, came to me and as he was voting for the first time that year, he just turned 18, and he said, "Dad, I'll vote for you, but you're going to clean up your act on the environment." So that was an important first step in a three-step metamorphosis. Second step was going to Antarctica with the science committee and seeing the evidence there. Third step, really something of a spiritual awakening in another science committee trip, interacting with an Australian climate scientist and being inspired by his faith and his commitment to love God and love people by caring for the creation. And so that Scott Heron is his name, was the reason I came home then and introduced the Raise Wages, Cut Carbon Act of 2009. My timing wasn't good to be proposing a carbon tax in the midst of the Great Recession when you represent a very conservative district in South Carolina. So I got booted out at a Republican primary and have ever since been working to convince fellow conservatives that there's an exciting free enterprise answer to climate change.
So you founded Republic EN as a mechanism to win over people who don't share your conviction that climate change is real but needs to be acted upon. Is your strategy to promote innovation and policy?
There are three ways to deal with climate change. You can regulate it, you can incentivize it, or you can price it. And regulate it, you know, that means it's you attempt to regulate down the emissions. You can incentivize it. That means that you give tax incentives for clean technologies. And then pricing it, which is the solution that we most prefer at republicen.org, is a very simple way of having the market reflect the true cost of burning of fossil fuels. And what you do is you just price that into products by a carbon tax. Now, of course, it's a rare day that you find a conservative saying, let's have a new tax. But this tax would be a special kind of tax. It's two things. It's revenue neutral. That means we would cut taxes somewhere else or dividend all the revenue from the carbon tax back to the people. So there's no growth of government. And second, it would be border adjustable, which means that we would apply the tax to goods coming in from other countries that don't have the same price on carbon dioxide. China would likely object in the World Trade Organization, but we think they lose that case based on precedents in the chemical industry. And after they've lost, they would find it in their interest to implement the same price on carbon dioxide internal to China so that when their goods are coming into the U.S., they're not paying a tax that's being remitted to Washington. They would have collected the tax, and the tax would have been remitted to Beijing. And then you've got the whole world following the American lead, not because of some protracted negotiations at the UN and some complicated agreement, but rather just a bold move by the United States that says, we're going to price carbon dioxide, and we think you're going to find it in your interest to do the same thing. But if you don't and you want to keep on paying our carbon tax, go right ahead, because we've got an enormous deficit and a tremendous debt. So we'd be glad to collect your money, collect taxes from you.
What's top of mind for you as we approach the 50th anniversary of Earth Day?
I think it's just remarkable how Earth Day was so successful in getting so many people aware of the degradation of our environment. And it's just remarkable the mobilization that occurred. And so what I hope in the 50th anniversary is that we would sense that same mobilization about climate change, that we would see that as the current biggest challenge. You know, in 1970, we had rivers on fire. We had effluent going into the rivers. It was of colors that don't occur in nature, you know, and when seen on TV, we could say, gee, that just isn't right. The challenge with climate change, of course, is it's slow moving. You don't see CO2. You can't taste it. You can't smell it. And so, oh, that we were able to see it. Then maybe it'd be like in 1970 when we're saying, gee, that color stuff should not be going into that river. And no, the river should not catch fire. I just hope that we can have the same mobilization and be as successful as they were so successful in creating Earth Day.
Tia Nelson shares that same hope.
I want the youth of today to know that they have enormous power in individual action. And whether that is joining Republic EN, Bob Inglis's group, or joining the Sunrise Movement, Varshini Prakash's group, or joining the Citizen Climate Lobby, a bipartisan group dedicated to putting a price on carbon pollution. There's an organization for every political persuasion and approach to addressing the climate crisis. Of course, at the end of the day, the most important thing one can do is vote for local, state, and national officials, elect to office people who are committed to implementing sound climate change policies. And so I want people to recognize that the climate crisis is the biggest environmental challenge humanity has ever faced, and that there are any number of ways that the individual can get involved, from joining an organization to voting, living their own values, and thinking about how they do that. And there's such power in individual action, and I want people to be inspired and feel that sense of agency and empowerment and unite to address this challenge.
Tia Nelson is the daughter of Earth Day founder and former U.S. Senator Gaylord Nelson. She's also the managing director of climate at the Outrider Foundation based in Madison. You also heard from Congressman Bob Inglis of South Carolina, who participated in the film and founded Republic EN. You can find a link to the film at WUWM.com.